docketed, and there's another bill before the House that does similar sorts of things too. So there may be some overlap in that respect. And that's basically...
Which bill is that one?
I think it's...
2299?
Well, we think it's 2203.
Okay.
In any event, it's a... Okay. I could check and get back to Bill Taylor on exactly which bill that was, but there is another bill that's similar to that. And that's basically...
Writs of execution.
Oh, well, Alan wanted me to mention that by way of example, when I gave that example about the mortgage foreclosure proceeding, it would apply to all kinds of proceedings relating to real property, such as probate, divorces, etc. But, I mean, the concept is the same, the filing of that short, brief notice of Liz Penance. And that basically is what the bill does at this time. And then it, you know, clarifies some RCP sections to allow for costs to be added for those recording fees in connection with any judgment that's rendered.
Okay, the original bill, I think, didn't it adjust those costs upward, if that's correct?
The original bill did adjust the costs up, but they adjusted it from $3.75 to $4. And the county clerks, they can probably speak to this issue themselves, but wanted a $5 fee because what they did is they removed the indexing fee. And so for some counties that have a very large indexing fee, they'll actually be losing some revenue. But for purposes of uniformity and just having a $5 fee, they decided to go ahead and have that one $5 fee, and that's what the adjustment is in connection with the amendments. But there was an adjustment upward, and this is just an upward adjustment to $5. And I believe there is another bill, too, that's been passed out of the House and is before the Senate now that does the same thing, the $5 fee. So I think it's already gone through. 2431.
Question. If this raises fees, does that mean it goes down the way it means?
We'll have to check that out.
Yeah. The question was not resolved from last time as to whether if this does adjust fees upwards, whether it would have to be referred down to Ways and Means, which is a question we'd want to resolve.
Okay, but that's something that I think Charles Stern can address.
Well, are there questions? Further comments? Thank you. Others wishing to testify at this time? Yeah, we do want to hear from you.
Charles Stern, Yamhill County Clerk. What do you want to hear? I would point out that the other bill they made mention of is 2203, which deals with the recording of orders assessing civil penalties. We are already now receiving orders and warrants assessing penalties from a number of state agencies and recording those in the county clerk lien record. This does a little more expansion of that policy from the state level, but that is duplicated in both bills. The lien issue, I mean the fee issue, where this bill originally raised filing fees to the same fee as recording. Then amendments came part of this to then move all those into conformity with what was done in 2431. 2431, when that bill was presented, it was discussed, and we've entered a lot of discussion over this discretionary indexing fee, which various county commissioners may establish in addition to the recording fee. Presently, the recording fee is $4 per page. And from county to county, that varies from nothing, the indexing fee, to as much as $4 per document. In Clackamas County, to record a two-page document, it's $4 a page, $8, plus another $4 for the indexing of it. In Lane County, they have a $3 indexing fee. The County Clerks Association discussed this at length through the interim as we met with the Land Title Association and their efforts to create this bill. And the association was pretty much agreed that the idea of a uniform fee was a good idea. We are all sending back recordings that are mailed to us with incorrect fees. So we package them up, reject them, send them back. It's a real inconvenience on the part of the user of the system. They've gone to the effort of calling their local recording office, the local county clerk, got the fees from them, but when they mail it to another county clerk, it's not the right fees anymore. And so we were all agreed that that was a reasonable goal to achieve statewide uniformity in the recording fees. All the counties that have an indexing fee greater than $2, we believe, will lose money based on this bill. Those counties which have no indexing fee, of course, are going to gain money. And those which have indexing fees at less than $2 will also gain.
Can you tell me what counties those would be that would lose money?
I can tell you a couple of counties right offhand. I would, to give a complete list of that, I would have
to... Just a couple.
Lane would be one of those.
Okay.
Yes.
And how about Multnomah and Washington? Just out of...
I cannot tell you what Washington County's indexing fee is. I don't know. But Clackamas is the biggest loser of it because they have the highest indexing fee of $4. But in discussions with Clackamas County, they were one of those most aggressive in trying to receive uniformity because they're mailing back so many documents for incorrect fees. Lane County isn't quite as enthusiastic about the loss of revenue.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
BJ, you testified the first time out. Could you let me know what the cities think now, if you've had a chance to review these?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm BJ Smith, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. Also, for the record, I'm on page 7 of the amendments, and I have yet to move all the way through. Although I did look at the amendments with respect to their treatment of the city lien dockets, it is my understanding that these amendments would basically leave the current operations of the city lien dockets and their effectiveness. They would not affect those current city lien dockets, and I do see those provisions in the bill. Based on that, we are willing to withdraw the objections that we raised at the earlier hearing.
Do you want an opportunity to go through the whole thing? I think.
I would like the opportunity to go through the whole thing thoroughly and make certain that all of the languages conform to that intent.
Okay. Thank you. Question?
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brar?
Chairman, members of the committee, Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. We received the amendments shortly before the hearing. Would like the opportunity to respond. I believe there is great improvement, but we just haven't had a chance.
Okay. Thank you. Might I make the suggestion that we ask counsel to... Oh, Linda? Excuse me, I didn't mean to...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Linda Zuckerman with the Judicial Department. I have some written testimony that I'll give you, which for the most part relates to the bill in its original form. There were...
Is that okay with you, that he's there?
Yeah, it's okay. I just think he's suspicious of me or something.
No.
Grab the microphone away. And all I wanted to comment on is that I haven't had a chance either to review the complete set of amendments incorporated into the bill, but if they do what my understanding is they're intended to do, which is to provide that judgments maintain their present status to create liens when they're docketed in judgment dockets, except for when you want to create a lien based on a judgment in a county other than the original county of docketing. Their proposals, I understand it would mean instead of transcribing to a judgment docket of another county, you'd put it in county clerk lien record, and we would not object to that change in the bill. So I can submit my comments still for the record, but would like the opportunity to review the amendments and just to make sure that they work all right.
If I may, I'd like to make a small proposal to the committee is that the amendments be provided to legislative council.
Would you state your name for the record?
Yes, this is Michael Magnus of the Oregon Land Tile Association. And I would like to suggest that the proposed amendments be given to Legislative Council to be incorporated into the bill to make the appropriate changes so that everybody that needs the opportunity to review them would have them just in a new bill, so they would be easier for everybody to read, and then in turn that would allow them to make the appropriate comments, and then all those comments could be made, and then we could make whatever adjustments were necessary to accommodate everybody's wishes in terms of the language and the grammar and the structure to get the concepts through in a way that would work well for the state of Oregon.
Well, I'll have to check with the chairman of the full committee. Isn't it normally the proponents that we can have LC go through and draft out so they're in an LC form, but the proponents usually have the responsibility of making sure that the bill is mocked up, bad term, so that they fit in. So that would, we can get it, we'll go ahead and have them draft it up, and then if you could go through the bill and hand gross them so that they, that
okay,
all the parties can look at it, because that's generally the proponent's responsibility.
Okay, we'll be more than happy to do that.
Fair. Okay.
Sure, we'll be more than happy to do that.
Then, unless there's other comments from the audience or from members of the committee, we'll get the staff to, or council to go down to Legislative Council, get them drafted up. Once you've had a chance to have them hand engrossed and show them to I think it's pretty clear who the parties involved are.
Yes.
Then we can address it at that time.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much.
Okay. Okay. Good. Then that'll close the hearing on 2323. The next item on the agenda is House Bill 2300. Again, it's scheduled for public hearing and work session. Are there those who wanted to testify on this bill?
I didn't find out.
Well, because it was scheduled or written as work session, a lot of people didn't, so if you'd state your name for the record.
Yes, for the record, my name is Alan Brickley. Again, an attorney at law with offices at 1211 Southwest 5th in Portland, Oregon. I'm here representing the Oregon State Bar's Real Estate and Land Use section. House Bill 2300, in the form that you have before you, has a couple of sections. The first thing I would like to indicate is, as far as Section 1 is concerned, it is our belief that the section, as it's presently constituted, is not necessary and that it should be omitted because of a recent Oregon Supreme Court decision, which essentially holds the way that the proposed legislation reads. So that particular section could be omitted.
Section 1?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me. Question?
May we have a citation on the case?
I don't have that citation, but I will provide it. I understood that that was the case today. I will provide that citation to the committee.
Thank you.
The second section in that particular bill relates to some amendments to existing Oregon Revised Statute 86.095 and has to do with those acts which would not modify the priority of a mortgage trust deed, and part of it, the amendments also include contract of sale. As a result of the recent economic downturn in the last several years, banks, savings and loans, various financial institutions get involved with rewriting, in effect, security documents. There is some indication in the law that some of the activities that are undertaken may affect the priority of the mortgage or trust deed. I think the conventional wisdom is that they do not, but in order to allay any fears or to allay any questions about that, the proposed modifications in Section 2 are set forth. Just by way of summary, they include extension of the term of the mortgage, substitution of notes, modification of the periodic payment if there's no increase in the principal amount or interest, and a general catch-all provision, any other act which does not prejudice the rights of parties who have liens on the real property subject to the mortgage. There's also another provision which simply indicates that if, in fact, the modification does prejudice the rights, it would only affect the priority as to the amount of prejudice as demonstrated.
Let me stop you right there, because I'd like to ask you a couple of questions on that point.
You bet.
If you look at line 26, G, any other act which does not prejudice the right of the party who has a lien, it could be essentially anything. You know, especially if you look when the subsequent lien holder has to demonstrate prejudice.
That's correct. It puts a burden on the subsequent lien holder.
Yeah. Isn't everything else that you say through A through F subsequent? You've listed a whole list, and then you put a catch-all phrase in there to open the barn door. Am I reading something incorrectly in that?
No, I think that's the correct interpretation of it. Well, what in effect, what is D, E, and F, extension, substitution, and modification, were those which are most commonly used, and essentially all of those that the committee could think of that would come up periodically. There was some concern that there may be other acts which could be undertaken, other modifications which could be undertaken, which would not have any effect or prejudice the rights of any subsequent lien holder. Just couldn't think of them, and that was the reason for the catch-all phrase.
Okay. Well, you, in other words, your committee couldn't think of them, and you don't have anything to demonstrate them.
No.
But you thought it was necessary to open it up just in case something might happen.
That's true, and that's correct. And it does shift the burden onto the subsequent lien holder to demonstrate prejudice. There's no question about that.
Well, okay, I think that's a significant policy change. Let's go to line 21. Given what you just told us on line 26G, why is the extension of the mortgage required, that term, extension of term? I mean, what did you have, illustrations or demonstrations or any sort of precedent that needed that?
No. That is simply to a degree, that's an extension of the catch-all phrase under paragraph G. If as a matter of policy you struck out G, I would suggest that that entire section would also have to be omitted, because there would be no purpose for it other than that.
Yeah. Okay, so again, you really, D and G are attached, and you couldn't demonstrate the need for them. You just thought, just in case there was something, you better have them in the statute.
That's correct.
Okay. One other question, and then I'll let you finish. I read that. Do you have an effective date, or did you want this an emergency clause, or some? I mean, what? When did you expect it to go into, or did it matter when it went into?
It does not matter.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's quite all right.
Other testimony, go ahead.
The other testimony that I have relates to some amendments, and I'm fully aware, based on your earlier comments and my general understanding of the process, that amendments at this time are not favored. But the reason for the amendments I'd like to propose is that this bill was reviewed together with the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar, and there were some additions, in effect, to this bill which were desired. Conceptually, both committees agreed on them. Conceptually, I believe the financial community agreed on them. The problem was we couldn't agree on the mechanics of how it would be done. That agreement was reached essentially yesterday, and this proposed amendment includes the various provisions that the parties have agreed on. In essence, what the proposed amendments do... Yes.
Do we have the proposed amendment?
No, I have them right here.
Thought
I'd...
No.
I knew we were missing something.
I mean, it helps.
I understand. I'll take just a moment to review those proposed amendments. Essentially, they deal with the general topic of the line of credit type mortgages and trust deeds, in which parties reach an agreement with a financial institution, and the institution agrees to loan up to a given amount of money based upon the demand or the request of the party with whom they've contracted. Again, there's some question in there as to whether or not these have priority, and so the reason is to include them. Again, it's the general consensus that you do have priority according to their terms, but it's requested that this be included in the statute. Just to briefly summarize the section with regard to the proposed amendments, the first section simply identifies what a line of credit mortgage or trust deed is, and identifies some minimum notice requirements in terms of the form. Yes?
Question. When you first started your testimony, you said we should strike all of Section 1 because of a recent court case, and Representative Springer asked you to cite that, and you said you would.
I would provide the citation, yes.
And then, but your amendments deal with Section 1 and amending that.
Yeah.
We're going to strike it. Are you suggesting that we include this?
No. The Section 1 and the proposed amendments are simply for purposes of identifying the amendments. They would have to be renumbered. This is not the Section 1 I'm referring to. The Section 1 I was referring to then is in the original version of the bill.
Okay.
Referring again to the proposed amendments, line of credit in that context means a mortgage or trust deed which secures an indebtedness and includes subsequent optional or obligatory advances. There is a substantive change in the law in that context, at least as viewed by most of the practitioners in the real estate area, and that is, it is felt that obligatory advances have the priority but not optional advances. So the addition of optional advances in this definition does in fact include a change in the substantive law as identified by lawyers.
Yeah. Could you give me some examples?
Yes. You mean as to the distinction between those two?
And when you say it opens it up, which indeed it would, what types of... Tell me why and who needs...
Well, in effect, the distinction between the two is essentially one of form rather than substance, quite frankly. In terms of the obligatory advances, if you look at most of the existing line of credit type documents, it will suggest that the lending institution is obligated, as long as there's no default, to provide the advance upon request. All the optional language we would do would be to change the form of that and to say up to that given amount, the lending institution has the option of providing it or not providing it. It simply leaves to the lending institution some discretionary ability to deny it for whatever purpose, whether it be some concern about the creditworthiness of the borrower, even though they may not be in default. You know, they may be overextended in credit in other areas, that sort of thing. That would be the purpose for the inclusion of the optional language. And that's essentially the distinction between the two. The balance of that provision simply identifies some notice requirements, and that is to include in a line of credit mortgage as a statement, to identify the maximum amount to be advanced pursuant to that credit line agreement, and to state the term, that is, how long is this credit agreement to last. Section 2 simply identifies the advances have priority as of the date of the recording of the original financing instrument. Section 3 was the area in which there was some concern, and essentially what Section 3 in its entirety does is to allow the person who has the credit line to reduce it. So let's say I have a $50,000 credit line and I want to reduce it to $25,000 because otherwise I can't borrow some money to buy my house or to buy a summer home or whatever. This provides a mechanism to allow the borrower to do that. And essentially that mechanism is for the borrower to deliver a notice to the lending institution, and it provides what is necessary to be included in that notice, and then provides for 20 days for the mortgage holder to object to it, in effect. And if they don't object to it, then puts on them the responsibility of recording a notice which says the credit line, the maximum credit line, is reduced to a given amount. And then if the lending institution doesn't respond within the time identified under Section 3, then the borrower is entitled to go ahead and take that action. Section 4 is a provision which simply allows the creditor to include in that overall amount any advance or any other charges which might be incurred after that notice is given. And by way of example, let's say that the request is reduced it to $25,000 from $50,000, but unbeknownst to the security holder, there was an advance which had not been processed, which took it over that amount requested, so that could be included. And then if they need to foreclose or to realize on that security, then they're allowed to include attorney's fees and other charges. And that's the essence of the amendments. And that is the balance of my testimony.
Thank you. Question? We're going to need to get these drafted up
certainly
in LC shape before we can really even comment on
it. I understand.
And then, Alan, if you could take the bill and hand engross it so we can see the substantive effects, that would help us look at it. Prior to that, there's really not going to be...
Sure, no, I understand.
At least I am not prepared to make movements, because I'll tell you, I have some problems with some other parts of the bill here. But once we get that, then we can put it all in total and see what it comes up with. Thank you. Any other questions? Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2300? Okay. We'll close the hearing on 2300. And go to House Bill 2198. And state your name for the record, please.
My name is Mary Lou Calvin. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice. Before I get started, yet some more amendments. I mailed amendments to all of you on the 17th of April, but I don't know that you have them in your packets. So if you'd like me to...
These 2549... No, that's the wrong one. 2198, the only ones I've got is Marcus's. If you want to come up at the same time, it would perhaps expedite the process.
I'm big on expedition.
Okay. And should these be titled Department of Justice?
They should. I apologize for that.
And they're not in LC form either?
No, they're not. The changes to the original bill are highlighted in yellow, however, to make it a little easier for you to figure out what we've added.
Okay. Thank you.
Simply put, House Bill 2198 modifies the existing law as it relates to foreclosing a mortgage to make it possible to obtain a foreclosure without some of the lengthy judicial delays we've experienced and probably all attorneys who foreclose mortgages experience. Department of Justice forecloses mortgages for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And it's we do a high volume work, and we've encountered some substantial problems locating certain defendants. The original bill that you have before you had three sections. The first was viewed as more or less a housekeeping matter. It codified existing procedure and provided for other lien holders than the first lien holder to be satisfied out of the proceeds of a judgment. We've encountered very little opposition to that. I made one minor change, which I think satisfied everyone who commented on that section of the bill. Section 3 was quite controversial. It allowed for early possession by a mortgagee and of premises. We decided, rather than lose the section we really care about, which is Section 2, we would just excise Section 3 entirely. It may be something that we'll want to try again someday, but we didn't want to jeopardize Section 2. And Section 2 provides that in the foreclosure of a mortgage on a single-family residence, and that's important, and when no deficiency judgment is sought, the service procedure is modified on the defendants that we serve. Basically, it provides that the amendments provide that after one attempt at personal service at the last known address of a defendant, and this could be the mortgagee, it could be a lien holder, it could be a county, it could be any number of entities, after one attempt at personal service, then service can be accomplished by certified and regular mail and by publication for 4 weeks. Because publication takes so long and is really more expensive than personal service, I can't foresee any mortgagees trying to foreclose a mortgage without using personal service if it can be used. But this would modify that procedure. We have cases that are 2 years old where people have abandoned, for all intents and purposes, any interest they have in the property, but we can't find them. And this would just speed that process up. We get the property back into state hands, back into productivity.